All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Sun Tzu said, "The enemy will never attack you where you are strongest. He will attack you where you are weakest. If you do not know your weakest point, be certain your enemy will." Welcome to the American Vindicta Show. I am your host, Doug Thornton. This is episode 19. Today's date is December the 13th, 2021. We are going to be discovering the weakness, which is the glass jaw of America, our grid. We're going to discuss this very thoroughly this week, starting tonight. Tonight, we're going to be drawing upon a document that was sent to Congress from the EMP Commission. You can find this at the empcommission.org. Before we go there, I'd like to talk to you real quick about what our grid is and what it makes up. The energy grid infrastructure is comprised of four main components: electricity generators, which are our hydroelectric dams, natural gas, coal, and nuclear plants, to include some geothermal pumping operations that the military uses. These generators are also known as generating stations. Next, we have large generator step-up transformers that helps to convert that energy to something usable. It then goes through transmission lines, which we would call power lines. From there, it will go to substation step-down transformers. These are the things that you see off to the side of the road with little to no protection, and that is typically within your county or within your city. You will see these step-down stations. That power will there go to the electric companies, who will distribute power from substations to other stations, and then from there all the way to the end user, which is you and me. Our country is reliant upon electricity to the point that it is our Achilles heel. Experts have been warning for years to the politicians and to the people who are in private businesses and large companies, the stakeholders, to protect our grid, to harden the infrastructure, to place better security around these sensitive components that run your everyday life. During the GridX2 drill, Kurt Hebert, who is the former chairman of the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, was quoted saying, "If we fail at electricity, we're going to fail miserably." And I agree. We have become so reliant upon our grid that we don't know how to come off of it. We are much like a terminal patient who is still kept together by the life-saving equipment in the hospital. If you unplugged us, how long would it take America to finally die? The experts say 1 year and we may lose up to 90% of the United States population. The uniqueness about our grid is that from the East Coast to the West Coast to the Central Texas power stations, there's only three grids in America, but they're all somewhat linked. Texas shares energy with neighbor states, and from the East Coast to West Coast, they are in somewhat connected. And some people say that if an EMP or a massive cyber attack were to happen from the East Coast, within a matter of hours, the West Coast would not have power either. If this is true, then we have to consider many variables, but at the end of the day, the government's priority is to maintain the government. Your priority will be to survive. So, we're going to be talking quite a bit about the worst case scenarios that this government refuses to fix. And this is every government since. This is not just Biden's fault. It wasn't just Trump's fault. This has been discussed since 2000. So we have multiple generations of failures here. And eventually, we cannot blame the government for something that the industry leaders and the stakeholders and private companies will not do themselves. There are some who are leading the charge. ERI is one company. They're creating a replaceable transmission that, a replaceable transformer that can quickly be put back up in case a grid down scenario, or in case a transformer locally blew. But it's these large generator step-up transformers that primarily were made overseas for a number amount of years. And we have a unique problem with gaining these artifacts, bring them over to the United States, and then from there, delivering them. You know, these transformers are so big that they can't exactly be carried by a truck. They have to be carried by a train. And the problem is, with this, is that we haven't had such a need for trains to be inspected along the railroads, along the bridges, not just for the uniqueness of the weight of these transformers, which are many, many tons, but also there is a possible problem with the debris that goes along the sides of the railroads that has to be cleared. Not saying it can't be done. I have the utmost faith in the men and women who work on our railroads. However, it's going to take time. If we experience some sort of a grid down scenario, it is going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort and security in order to move these objects. And, you know, typically whenever these disasters happen, it's too late for you to rely upon the government to come and save you. That's why I have been pressing very hard over these last few shows for communities to be prepared. And it is up to you, the citizen, to go to your civilian counterparts that run your city or your county or your township, wherever you're at, and ask them if they have a plan. if that plan has been updated. When was that plan last reviewed by any type of experts, from the military to law enforcement, some sort of first aid or first responder corps, you know, anything more than just themselves? You know, when I was in the government, we had problems with updating documents or making sure that documents had been updated, had been reviewed by stakeholders, by the managers and the supervisors, and everything signed off. And typically, you know, we would, in my position, we would help people get these documents back up and running the way they should have been. That way, all the safety protocols were there. And by the time I needed just a simple signature in order to approve of this document, they would say, wait, my boss is in Washington, D.C. They have to review it. I can't sign it. So a lot of work would be done to ensure the safety of a facility or of a agency, and we wouldn't get a return, sometimes for days, sometimes for weeks or months. Just a simple signature. So, you know, if the government routinely fails at this, it is up to the states, the locals, and the private industry to step up and save our grid. That is our most precious commodity, is power on demand. We're going to go to a quick break. I have quite a bit to discuss with you, quite a bit to talk about. And I'm going to keep a lot of my opinions out of this for right now. I'm just going to honestly read you something that was given to Congress to review. And this is open source. You can find this. The only problem is, America, you haven't heard it before. So be prepared. We'll see you on the other side.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
And we're back. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We are going to continue to talk about the EMP threat to America. And I'm going to start this off by reading a report from the New York Times that was wrote by Matthew Wald, back in 2013. And this question is still not answered. The electric grid, as a government and private experts describe it, is the glass jaw of the American industry. If an adversary lands a knockout blow, they fear it could black out vast areas of the continent for weeks, interrupt supplies of water, gasoline, diesel, fuel, and fresh food, shut down communications, and create disruptions of a scale that was only hinted at by Hurricane Sandy and the attacks of September 11. This is why thousands of utility workers, business executives, National Guard officers, FBI, anti-terrorism experts, and officials from government agencies in the United States, Canada, and Mexico are preparing for an emergency drill in November that will simulate physical attacks and cyber attacks that could take down large sections of the power grid. They will practice for a crisis unlike anything the real grid has ever seen, and more than 150 companies and organizations have signed up to participate. This is the difference from a hurricane that hits X, Y, and Z counties in the southeast, and they have a loss of power for 3 or 4 days, said the official in charge of the drill, Brian M. Harrell, of the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, also known as NERC. We really want to go beyond that. One goal of the drill, called GridX2, is to explore how governments would react as the loss of the grid crippled the supply chain for everyday necessities. If we fail at electricity, we're going to fail miserably, Kurt Hebert, a former chairman of the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, said at a recent conference held by the Bipartisan Policy Center. Mr. Harrell said that previous exercises were based on the expectation that electricity would be up and running relatively quick after an attack. Now, he said, the goal is to educate the federal government on what their expectations should or shouldn't be. The industry held a smaller exercise 2 years ago in which 75 utilities, companies, and agencies participated, but this one will be vastly expanded and will be carried out in a more anxious mood. Most of the participants will join the exercise from their workplaces with NERC in Washington, announcing successive failures. One example, organizers say, is a substation break-in that officials initially think is an attempt to steal copper, but instead the intruder uses a USB drive to upload a virus into a computer network. The drill is part of a give and take in the past few years between the government and utilities that has exposed the difficulties of securing the electric system. The grid is essential for almost everything, but it is mostly controlled by investor-owned companies or municipal or regional agencies. 99% of military facilities rely on commercial power, according to the White House. The utilities play down their abilities in comparison with the governments. They have the intelligence operation, the standing army, the three-letter agencies, said Scott Aronson, Senior Director of National Security Policy at the Edison Electric Institute, the Trade Association of Investor-Owned Utilities. We have the grid operations expertise. That expertise involves running 5,800 major power plants and 450,000 miles of high-voltage transmission lines monitored and controlled by a staggering mix of devices installed over decades. Some utilities use their own antique computer protocols and are probably safe from hacking, what the industry calls security through obscurity. But others rely on Windows-based control systems that are common to many industries. Some of them run on in-house networks, but computer security experts say that they are not confident that all the connections to the public internet have been discovered and secured. Many may be vulnerable to software, known as malware, that can disable the systems or destroy their ability to communicate, leaving their human operators blind about the positions of switches, the flows of current, and other critical parameters. Experts say a sophisticated hacker could also damage hard-to-replace equipment. In an effort to draw utilities and the government closer, the industry recently established the Electric Subsector Coordinating Council, made up of high-level executives, to meet with the federal officials. The first session is next month. Mind you, this is from 2013. Preparation for the November drill has come as Congress is debating laws that could impose new standards to protect the grid from cyber attacks, but many in the industry, some of who would like such rules, doubt they can pass. The drill is being planned as conferences, studies, and even works of fiction are raising near-apocalyptic visions of catastrophes involving the grid. A National Academy of Sciences report last year said that the terrorist could cause broad hardship for months with physical attacks on hard-to-replace components. An emergency effort led in part by R. James Woosley, a former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, is gearing up to pressure state legislators to force utilities to protect equipment against an electromagnetic pulse, which could come from solar activity or be caused by small nuclear weapons exploded at low altitude, frying crucial components. An attack using an electromagnetic pulse is laid out in an extensive detail in the novel One Second After, published in 2009 and endorsed by Newt Gingrich, who's also the former Speaker of the House. In another novel, Gridlock, published this summer and co-written by Byron L. Dorgan, the former senator from North Dakota, a rogue Russian agent working for Venezuela and Iran, helps hackers threaten the grid. In the preface, Mr. Dorgan says, such an attack could cause 10,000 times as much devastation as the terrorist strikes on September 11th in 2001. Despite the growing anxiety in the government and the private sector have had the trouble coordinating their grid protection efforts, the utility industry argues that the government has extensive information on threats but keeps it classified. Government officials concede the problem, and they have suggested that some utility executives get security clearances, but with hundreds of utilities and thousands of executives, it cannot issue such clearances fast enough. And the industry would like to be instantly warned when the government identifies internet servers that are known to be sources of malware. Another problem is that the electric system is so tightly integrated that a collapse in one spot, whether by error or intent, can set off a cascade, as happened in August 2003 when a power failure took a few moments to spread from Detroit to New York. Sometimes utility engineers and law enforcement officials also seem to speak different languages. In his book, Protecting Industrial Control Systems from Electronic Threats, Joseph Weiss, an engineer and cybersecurity expert, recounted a meeting between electrical engineers and the FBI in 2008. When an FBI official spoke at length about IEDs, he was referring to improvised explosive devices, but to the engineers, the abbreviation meant intelligent electronic devices. An expert's fear, government-sponsored hacking. Michael V. Hayden, another former CIA director, speaking at the Bipartisan Policy Center conference, said that the Stuxnet virus, which disabled some of Iran's centrifuges for enriching uranium, might invite retaliation. In a time of peace, someone just used a cyber weapon to destroy another nation's critical infrastructure. So, that took a little bit to read out, but ladies and gentlemen, it's real. The threat is there. And the threat has always been there, and the threat will always be there until we solve this problem. Organizations like the EMP Commission, spokespeople like Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, these people have shouted from the rooftops to Congress and to our government for years that we need to just go ahead and secure our grid. It wouldn't take, from what the experts say, maybe less than $10 billion, something Joe Biden spends every 2 days, just to be able to secure our grid. Now, you as a civilian can secure your own grid if you live on your own grid. So what does that mean? You can build Faraday cages. You can buy Faraday cage apparatus bags to put electronic devices in. But here's the problem is that if you put all these devices into these bags and there is no power, how do you use them? So have multiple sources of power. You can go and visit probably your local engineers and ask them how to set up your own power generating system from your house. You can use RAM water from flowing streams that go downhill where you connect a hydroelectric ram that then just pushes water into some electrical components, and it'll start to produce power for you. But that power, you know, may be seasonal. That power may stop. You can also use solar. Solar is somewhat reliable, depending on the weather, depending on the time of year, but the batteries will eventually go out. Generators are probably the best and strongest, but they're the loudest, they're the biggest, they're the heaviest, hardest to move, depending on what generator you have, and probably also the hardest to refuel. So we have quite the question in front of us. What is the best option? Right now, any option is the best option. Don't be caught off guard. Do not be the one that doesn't have the response for when the grid goes down. If they want to tear this country apart, they'll do it from the inside. No one is brave enough to attack us from the outside. It's not just the military. The world is afraid of America, and it can't be afraid of the land. It's afraid of we, the people. We have the freest and most fiercest nation in the world that the world has ever seen. And no nation has an answer for that. Not militarily. So they have to weaken us. They have to put us on a more fair playing ground. And if you destroy our power grid, there's such a cascading amount of attacks that can happen within that. Between our power going out, people losing their absolute minds, the rioting, the mobs, the mob justice, the complete deacceleration of human life from a lot of these large urban centers. You know, when people devolve back into monsters again because there's no one to hold them really accountable, law enforcement's not showing up. The military probably is going to be very, very spread thin. And more than likely, the military will be used to, I would say, secure infrastructure, secure DOD installations, secure places where the government is going to relocate itself. The government will take care of itself first before it takes care of the people. So, consider that. We're going to go to our next break. And after that, no breaks. We're going all the way to the end. And I hope you're ready to listen. I hope I don't make you fall asleep. Wake up, stretch a little bit, drink some coffee. I'll see you on the other side.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And we're back. This is American Vindicta. We are going to talk about the letter that the EMP Commission gave to Congress. And I'm just going to get right into it. I'm going to stray away from a lot of my comments, a lot of my objections that may be on this. I think this document really speaks for itself. It is so thorough that you should be printing this off and keeping it at your house and reading it. It is so thorough that you should be sending it to your local police department, sheriff's department, fire department, the mayor, your city council, and they should be reading this. This is the report of the commission to assess the threat to the United States from electromagnetic pulse attack, critical national infrastructures. This is not science fiction, ladies and gentlemen. This was wrote back in April 2008. All right, here we go. And this is just the preface. There's so much of this document I can't, obviously cannot read it all within the next 10-15 minutes, but here we go. The physical and social fabric of the United States is sustained by a system of systems, a complex and dynamic network of interlocking and interdependent infrastructures, quote-unquote critical national infrastructures, whose harmonious functioning enables the myriad actions, transactions, and information flow that undergird the orderly conduct of civil society in this country. The vulnerability of these infrastructures to threats, deliberate, accidental, and acts of nature, is the focus of greatly heightened concern in the current era, a process accelerated by the United States for the events of 9/11 and recent hurricanes, including Katrina and Rita. This report represents the results of the Commission's assessment of the effects of a high-altitude electromagnetic pulse attack on our critical national infrastructures and provides recommendations for their mitigation. The assessment is informed by analytic and test activities executed under Commission sponsorship, which are discussed in this volume. An earlier executive report called the Report of the Commission to Assess the Threat to the United States from Electromagnetic Pulse, Volume 1, in 2004, provided an overview of the subject. The electromagnetic pulse generated by high-altitude nuclear explosion is one of a small number of threats that can hold our society at risk of catastrophic consequences. The increasingly pervasive use of electronics of all forms represents the greatest source of vulnerability to attack by an EMP. Electronics are used to control, communicate, compute, store, manage, and implement nearly every aspect of the United States civilian systems. When a nuclear explosion occurs at high altitude, the EMP signal it produces will cover the wide geographic region within the line of sight of the detonation. This broadband high-altitude EMP, when coupled into sensitive electronics, has the capability to produce widespread and long-lasting disruption and damage to the critical infrastructures that underpin the fabric of the United States society. Because of this ubiquitous dependence of the U.S. society on the electric power system, its vulnerability to an EMP attack, coupled with the EMP's particular damage mechanisms, creates the possibility of long-term catastrophic consequences. The implicit invitation to take advantage of this vulnerability, when coupled with increasing proliferation of nuclear weapons and their delivery systems, is a serious concern. A single EMP attack may seriously degrade or shut down a large portion of the electric power grid in the geographic area of EMP exposure, effectively instantaneously. There is also a possibility of functional collapse of grids beyond the exposed areas as electrical effects propagate from one region to another. The time required for full recovery of service would depend on both the disruption and damage to the electrical power infrastructure and to other national infrastructures. Larger affected areas and stronger EMP field strengths will prolong the time to recover. Some critical electrical power infrastructure components are no longer manufactured in the United States, and their acquisition ordinarily requires up to a year of lead time in routine circumstances. So going back, that is our large generator step-up transformers that are made in Korea. Yippee, hooray. It's going to take a year or more, possibly, to get those if we don't have many of them already staged for this event. I've been told that we do have some staged for this event, but we don't have many. Damage to or loss of these components could leave significant parts of the electrical infrastructure out of service for periods measured in months to a year or more. There's a point in time at which the shortage or exhaustion of sustaining backup systems, including emergency power supplies, batteries, standby fuel supplies, communications, and manpower resources that can be mobilized, coordinated, and dispatched together, lead to a continuing degradation of critical infrastructures for a prolonged period of time. Electrical power is necessary to support other critical infrastructures, including supply and distribution of water, food, fuel, communications, transportation, financial transactions, emergency services, government services, and all other infrastructure supporting the national economy and welfare. Should significant parts of the electrical power infrastructure be lost for any substantial period of time, the Commission believes that the consequences are likely to be catastrophic, and many people may ultimately die for the lack of the basic elements necessary to sustain life in dense urban and suburban communities. Wow, what have I been saying for quite a while? Get out of the cities, get out of the suburbs. In fact, the Commission is deeply concerned that such impacts are likely in the event of an EMP attack, unless practical steps are taken to provide protection for critical elements of the electrical system and for rapid restoration of electric power, particularly to essential services. The recovery plans for the individual infrastructures currently in place essentially assume, at worst, limited upsets to the other infrastructures that are important to their operation. Such plans may be of little or no value in the wake of an EMP attack because of its long duration effects on all infrastructures that rely on all electricity or electronics. We don't have a reliable secondary or tertiary objectiveness here. If a large-scale EMP attack hits the United States centrally, its line of sight destruction will go from the West Coast to East Coast. Part of Canada will be shut down because they use part of our power system. The northern part of Mexico will also lose power because they use part of the West Coast power system. Everything, potentially, that is ran off of microprocessors, off of any microchips, off of any type of unprotected sensitive electrical device, ladies and gentlemen, can go down and not come back. This is a very serious threat, but they don't talk about it a lot. The ability to recover from this situation is an area of great concern. The use of automated control systems has allowed many companies and agencies to operate effectively with small workforces. Thus, while manual control of systems may be possible, the number of people knowledgeable enough to support manual operations is limited. We have more robots than we have engineers. Repair of physical damage is also constrained by a small workforce. Many maintenance crews are sized to perform routine and preventative maintenance of high reliability equipment. When repair or replacement is required that exceeds routine levels, arrangements are typically in place to augment crews from outside the effective area. However, due to simultaneous, far-reaching effects from an EMP, the anticipated augmenters likely will be occupied in their own areas. Thus, repairs normally requiring weeks of effort may require a much longer time than planned. The consequences of an EMP event should be prepared for and protected against to the extent it is reasonably possible. Cold War-style deterrence through mutually assured destruction is not likely to be an effective threat against potential protagonists that are either failing states or transnational groups. Therefore, making preparations to manage the effects of an EMP attack, including understanding what has happened, maintaining situational awareness, having plans in place to recover, challenging and exercising those plans, and reducing vulnerabilities is critical to reducing the consequences, and thus probability of attack. The appropriate national-level approach should balance prevention, protection, and recovery. The Commission requested and received information from a number of federal agencies and national laboratories. We received information from the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, the President's National Security Telecommunications Advisory Committee, the National Communications System, since absorbed by the Department of Homeland Security, the Federal Reserve Board, and the Department of Homeland Security. Early in this review, it became apparent that only limited EMP vulnerability testing had been accomplished for modern electronic systems and components. To partially remedy this deficit, the Commission sponsored illustrative testings of current systems and infrastructure components. The Commission's view is that the federal government does not today have sufficiently robust capabilities for reliably assessing managing EMP threats. The United States faces a long-term challenge to maintain technical competence for understanding and managing the effects of nuclear weapons, including EMP. The Department of Energy and National Nuclear Security Administration has developed and implemented an extensive nuclear weapons stockpile stewardship program over the last decade. However, no comparable effort was initiated to understand the effects that nuclear weapons produce on modern systems. The Commission reviewed current national capabilities to understand and to manage the effects of EMP and concluded that the country is rapidly losing the technical competence in this area that it needs in the government, national laboratories, and in the industrial community. An EMP attack on the national civilian infrastructures is a serious problem, but one that can be managed by coordinated and focused efforts between industry and government. It is the view of the Commission that managing the adverse impacts of EMP is feasible in terms of time and resources. A serious national commitment to address the threat of an EMP attack can develop a national posture that would significantly reduce the payoff for such an attack and allow the United States to recover in a timely manner if such an attack were to occur. Unreal. This was wrote about so long ago, and we still don't even have a real answer for it. So, what we're about to talk about next is about SCADA systems. The SCADA system is something that the Commission thought was a large proponent of a weakness that we have within the industry of America. I'm just going to read it verbatim And you can tell me what you think about it. The commission thought it important to single out the growth and common infrastructural infiltration of one particular transformative technology, the development of automated monitoring and control systems, the ubiquitous robots of the modern age known as supervisory control and data acquisition systems, SCADA. This opening chapter thus focuses on a more detailed description of these two aspects of modern infrastructures, control systems, and mutual interdependence that are common to all, in which the Commission believes provides context and insight for understanding sources of vulnerability in all of the nation's infrastructures to the EMP attack. SCADAs have emerged as critical and growing elements of a quietly unfolding industrial revolution spurred by the computer age. Words are hard. God. The accelerating penetration of SCADA systems, along with their electronic cousins, which are digital control systems, DCS, and programmable logic controllers, PLC, as critical elements in every aspect of every critical infrastructure in the nation is both inevitable and inexorable. While conferring economic benefit and enormous new operational agility, the growing dependence of our infrastructures on these omnipresent control systems represents a new vector of vulnerability in the evolving digital age of the 21st century, such as a cyber threat, which will also include the high-altitude EMP, which focuses our attention toward another potential vulnerability of these systems, and one with potentially vastly expanded consequences. So it goes in briefly about what a SCADA system is and what it does, but I want to read to you real quick. In November 1999, San Diego County Water Authority and San Diego Gas and Electric Companies experienced severe electromagnetic interference to their SCADA wireless networks. Both companies found themselves unable to actuate critical valve openings and closings under remote control of the SCADA electronic systems. This inability necessitated sending technicians to remote locations to manually open and close water and gas valves, averting, in the words of a subsequent letter of complaint by the San Diego County Water Authority to the Federal Communications Commission, a potential quote-unquote catastrophic failure of the aqueduct system. The potential consequences of a failure of this 825 million gallon per day flow rate system ranged from spilling vents as thousands of gallons per minute to the aqueduct rupture with ensuing disruption of service, severe flooding, and related damage to private and public property. The source of the SCADA failure was later determined to be radar operated on a ship 25 miles off the coast of San Diego. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about this. There are numerous threat actors out there that want to take down our grid. They have multiple different avenues that they can use to take down our grid. In, I think it was Los Angeles County. I know it was in California. There was two men who were shooting at substation transformers, these step-down transformers, with AK-47s. They seem to have had some sort of a prior military training to them, the way they located their target. They were shooting from a elevated position. They actually used a series of rock pilings for their known locations for where they would start to shoot from. And they were shooting, I think, probably close to 200 meters away, if I'm correct. Some of you out there who may know this a little bit better than me can correct me on this, but they they did fire and hit two of the transformers. One of them, if it had been connected, would have went offline. The other one took damage, but thankfully did not go offline, but it was connected. So you have the ballistic, obviously, the ballistic threat. You also have the threat from vehicle ramming. If you look at the substations that are on the side of the road that are, you know, within your county, typically, you know, all they have is a chain link fence. And typically, there is a churred rock road that goes straight to it that if you really wanted to, you could ram that fence. You could probably cut right through that fence within a matter of a minute or so, depending on what power tools you have. Set Tannerite on it, step back, shoot it, walk off, and blackout. That easy. So, vehicle ramming, ballistic. You obviously have the explosives. You know, then we have cyber attacks. Cyber attacks happen, from what I was last told, millions of times a month, just on the Texas grid. So if that is that frequent, these DDoS attacks, which is a denial of service, a direct denial of service. What it does is let me speak a little bit of nerd lingo here. You have ones and zeros constantly going on within all these computers, right? And that's how we're controlling these systems. All right, so a DDoS attack comes in and it blocks that one from turning to a zero. Well, if enough of that happens for a long enough time, you can effectively shut down a system. Now, something like a nuclear power plant that is very well protected and hardened, if these systems start to go down, well, we have moments, hopefully, moments to get that system back online. But, you know, our nuclear power plants are, I would say, very well protected. If you work within that industry, you probably know a little bit more than I do. But, you know, how protected are they? Because between Iran, China, Russia, North Korea, you know, whatever terrorist organization that is out there or third world country that wants to see us destroyed, everybody is attacking our grid. Nobody is attacking the United States. Think of that. If all these threat actors constantly try to attack our grid to take our grid down, if they're that emboldened to do it, they must be seeing threats that are out there. Now, within these Windows systems that I did speak about earlier, Windows is notorious for having backdoors within their systems that people will be able to gain by going to online forums and looking up a lot of engineers, because a lot of engineers and tech guys are on these forums. And, you know, they'll just, they'll do a little bit of guesswork here and there. And through their, you know, these hackers will have their own investigative teams that will find out who you are, find your passwords, get into the system, supplant a virus, and then either enact that virus or will hold you hostage through some sort of a ransomware. And it's a zero-sum game. You know, if you don't pay, we destroy everything. If you don't pay, we take all your security protocols offline, and then we let the power plant implode. Or we shut off the valves, the relief valves to the hydroelectric dam, and we let the dam implode and flood, you know, millions of acres potentially, depending on which dams we're talking about. So, you know, we have these problems throughout the United States, and they're not very well protected. There's not exactly a lot of security staff on many of these energy places. You know, how much security staff is on just your water treatment plants? How much security staff are on these substation transformers or the large transmission power lines? Just recently in Pennsylvania, someone flew a drone with a large copper wire and attempts to entangle it on this power line, effectively shutting down the grid. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But they've also used drones to fly explosives into these power lines to try and separate them. In Washington State, when I was last working there while we were working the riots in Oregon, we were getting reports of people that were trying to cut down phone poles or power line poles with chainsaws. And, you know, they hit, I think, two or three of them in a row, but just did not get all the way through with it for whatever reason. Also, you have the problem of people starting wildfires. And these wildfires, they become so out of control, it will have a potential secondary effect of taking down grid locations, not just from a brownout, but from the power stations themselves being destroyed, power lines being effectively destroyed. You know, all these things takes quite a long time to rerun these power lines and to get all these things back up and running. But you'll see these pipelines and power line avenues throughout the United States, and there's no security protecting it. Any terrorist or any would-be assailant, any lone wolf actor can go out there and almost not even be seen and take down one of these power line towers. And bam goes the grid. So it wouldn't be the entire grid, but man, it would be a large amount of it. Why don't we have this protection? If our government is not prepared, then it's up to we, the people, to prepare. It is up to our communities to be prepared, the individual to be prepared. Throughout this week, we're going to talk about many examples of the EMP threat, the grid down scenarios, what that may potentially look like, what remedies are out there, and what I think you should have as a necessary preparations. It's going to be a somber week. My name is Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.